Scott Walker is an amazing politician, able to deftly sidestep questions and disassemble with apparent conviction. That's according to our guest this hour, Bill Leaders, the associate editor of the Progressive Magazine. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. During this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we'll talk with Bill Leaders about his most recent piece in the current issue of The Progressive about Scott Walker, the politician, how he operates and what it's like to fall under his spell. And we will welcome your thoughts and your questions. What do you think of Governor Scott Walker as a politician? What do you think are his best or worst qualities? And we need you to be civil if you call in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So what chances do you give him of winning the Republican presidential nomination or even the whole thing? We'll talk about it this hour. Bill Leaders is the associate editor of the Progressive Magazine and a columnist. His latest piece, The Amazing Scott Walker, was published just yesterday. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. I'd just like to say something in reference to your last hour of programming and tell the world that one of the things I'm grateful for is Wisconsin Public Radio.
Aww.
I've been a listener all my life. I've been coming on various programs for more than a decade, and I'm always impressed with the professionalism and the commitment and the hard work that I know goes into making this a great radio station.
Thank you so much. That was very kind, Bill Leaders, and I will say back to you. We had an hour on, in case you're just joining us, talking about gratitude and expressing gratitude in our last hour. Talk to the author of the Gratitude Diaries. Well, I am grateful that we have reporters like you writing articles like this. Your latest piece is called The Amazing Scott Walker. In a nutshell, and we have the whole hour, but in a nutshell, what's so amazing about Scott Walker?
Well, I think the first time that it occurred to me that there was something fundamentally different about Scott Walker from other politicians that I've covered and observed was during the Act 10 dust-up, when there were these press conferences and there were reporters jammed into a room, and you could hear the shouts of literally tens of thousands of people gathered in and around the Capitol as Scott Walker, you know, stuck to his guns and stayed on message and proceeded to achieve his agenda in that moment. And what occurred to me is that what a normal, ordinary politician would have done in a situation like that, when there are 100,000 people outside your door telling you that you're wrong, would be to back down, declare victory, make some compromises, and get past the situation, heal the rift. What Walker did was he stuck to his guns. He didn't give an inch. And I think that's extraordinary. I think people need to look at that quality seriously as they consider him as a potential candidate for president. There may be some people who think that's great. Here's finally a guy who's not going to be intimidated, someone who's not going to give in to pressure. But you also need to wonder whether absolute commitment is always a good idea, that refusal to compromise is a good idea. In the real world of politics, that type of attitude can potentially cause great damage. It can lead to conflict that can and should be avoided.
Now, what do you say, though, Bill, to those who say that he was, it's laughable to say that he was unintimidated, that he had a Republican legislature, he had law enforcement protection, security protection, he used the tunnels, the protesters were really just, school teachers and librarians, and that there was really nothing to really be that intimidated.
Well, it is true that, during the Act 10 dust-up, Walker did not directly put himself in contact with the people who were opposing him. I guess people would say he kind of hid from the crowds. He did face the media, though, and he did answer tough questions. He stuck to his guns to a certain extent. But, yeah, Scott Walker gets a lot of credit for standing up to this group of people. But what it comes down to is that he divided one group of people in the state against another, and he created lasting damage in terms of those relationships. He writes in his book, Unintimidated, and I quote that, you know, there are people in Wisconsin that don't talk to each other anymore because of the rift that was created over his policies. For him, that's an acceptable outcome. I think, though, people should question whether that was a smart and a good and a wise and a sane thing to do.
So you wrote that through sheer political skill, Walker managed to craft a public image almost completely unrelated to his public record. Why do you say that?
Well, he gets credit for things like being a straight shooter. People that support him will say, oh, he tells it like it is. He's a straight shooter. In fact, Scott Walker has a documented record of duplicity that's beyond just about any other political figure. He's got more than 70 statements that have been judged by PolitiFact Wisconsin to be false, mostly false, or pants on fire, far more statements that they've tested and found to be true or mostly true. So here he is, someone who routinely says things that aren't true, that can be proven to be not true, getting the benefit of people saying he's a straight shooter, he tells it like it is. I think on some level, people want him to be the political leader that he isn't. They want him to be this straight-talking, committed, honest, unflappable individual. And so they create that persona, whether or not it exists in fact.
This week at the Iowa State Fair, Governor Walker was touting his credentials when a protester that was in the crowd right in front of him started to heckle him, and he got Walker's attention. Here's how Walker responded to him.
I am not intimidated by you, sir, or anyone else out there. I will fight for the American people over and over and over and over again. You want someone who's tested? I'm right here. You can see it. This is what happened in Wisconsin. We will not back down. We will do what is necessary to defend the American people going forward.
So what did you take away from that exchange?
Well, I watched the video of that, and the thing that I found astonishing is right about the time that Scott Walker made that remark, this individual was holding a little placard toward the front of the crowd, held it up, and one of Walker's supporters in the crowd grabbed it from him and tore it in half. This all happened right as he's giving this speech within the same couple of minutes. And I found that kind of shocking. And I would have thought that a good thing for a politician to have done in a situation like that would have been to say, you know, let him have his sign. Let him have his ability to come here and hold that up. I don't need for my supporters to be ripping it out of his hands and tearing it up. I want him to be able to express his view and for that to be part of the dialogue. His message, though, is really one of, you know, absolute belligerence to try to take that situation and turn it into a situation of good versus evil, where he's good, the person there with the sign is evil. And I think he does it a lot. He divides the world into very polarizing terms, where the people who support him are good and the people who don't are evil, or they, at least they can be completely disregarded because they're so fundamentally wrong and wrong-headed.
Yeah. So what do you think the crowd's takeaway from that was?
Well, if you go to an event to see Scott Walker, you're presumably more likely a supporter of his. So I think, you know, that feeds a certain, you know, red meat leaning of a group of people that they like seeing a politician tell somebody off. I think we see that with Donald Trump, too. The idea of being harsh and belligerent and even insulting has appeal. Because there are people who are just angry and people who just want to see a bruising, bare-knuckled fight. They want their politicians to be thuggish in some respect. Now, I'm not saying that's true necessarily of Scott Walker, even of Donald Trump. Well, I guess in Donald Trump, I would say that's true of him. But, you know, there is that will on the part of the people to have a fighter, whether or not you know, delivering blows is the thing that a situation calls for.
Yeah. We have just a minute before a newscast, but what do you make, Bill, of when I posted your piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, we had a listener who was a supporter of Scott Walker who, you know, who frequently comments with, thank God for Scott Walker. And just a very, very vocal support of Scott Walker. Why do you think there is such a divide? People either hate him or love him.
Well, because he is polarizing, because he does divide the world into camps, people who are on his side and people who are against him. And I think people feel a certain sense of affinity with him if they're among those who are on his side. And he is their fighter. I refer in the piece to, you know, he takes the compliments of people who urge him to crush the bastards in reference to the citizens of the state of Wisconsin. Does Wisconsin or does the United States of America really need a bastard crusher in chief?
Bill Leaders is the associate editor of the Progressive magazine. His latest piece, The Amazing Scott Walker, was published just yesterday. We have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We welcome your thoughts and questions for Bill at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. During this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are talking with Bill Leaders of the Progressive magazine about his new piece, The Amazing Scott Walker, which describes Scott Walker, the politician, how he operates. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your thoughts on this. What do you think of Scott Walker as a politician? What do you think of Scott Walker as a leader? What chances do you give him of winning the Republican presidential nomination or even the whole thing? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, you know, Bill, I just mentioned that Charles Franklin will be on Central Time this afternoon after 4 talking about the Marquette Law School poll. I don't have the results, but I'm assuming he asked about Scott Walker. What's your thoughts as somebody who has covered him for a long time? What do you make of his chances of winning the Republican presidential nomination?
I think it's very difficult to predict the outcome of electoral contests, particularly if there are, you know, 17 candidates running for one nomination. But I think you have to regard Scott Walker as one of the most serious contenders for the nomination. I think that other candidates are going to fail. They're going to make errors that he is not going to make. I think that his appeal is going to consolidate. I think some of the other people who are receiving support are going to drop out of the race before he does, and he's going to get some of that support. I think he's going to be going right down to the wire, certainly into the primary contest itself, as a major contender for the position. For good and bad, for the reasons that I try to identify in my piece, makes him, you know, really an unusual and extraordinary political player. And, you know, and for those very same reasons, I think people need to think about whether these are qualities that we want in a president.
You do think it's a mistake to underestimate him, too?
Oh, absolutely. I think he's showing that again and again.
Let's take some calls. Let's go to Bob in Nina. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Bill. I read your article online this morning, and I have to agree in part with most of it. I wanted to compare Walker to Thompson, because when Tommy was governor, anyway, he was not afraid to go out in public and meet the people, regardless of their political affiliation. We were not friends of Tommy, but we associated with him. Walker is afraid to walk in public. Even Obama goes out in public. As much as he's hated by the Republicans, Walker's afraid to go out in public and talk to people. He selects his crowd. He's surrounded by state police no matter what state he's in, where he goes. He's a coward, for one thing. I mean,
yeah. Well, Bob, thanks. So he's afraid to go out in public, Bob says.
Well, there's a difference between Scott Walker and Tommy Thompson that explains those approaches Scott Walker has created real enemies among the people in his own state. He's not going to be able to go places where anyone is welcome and not draw opponents. I mean, people are looking for opportunities to protest him, to oppose him, to say they don't like him or what he stands for. So, I mean, I don't think Thompson had those type of impassioned opponents among the populace. He wasn't as divisive. He didn't create the same volume of animosity and the same number of enemies. So it's an important observation to make that Scott Walker cannot, you know, appear as freely in public as previous governors simply because so many people have come to dislike him so strongly that it would be, you know, against his interests to do so.
You have interviewed Scott Walker multiple times. What's your impression of him as a person?
I'm tempted to say I like him because I do. I mean, personally, he's a personal guy. All right, he listens to you when you ask questions. He gives what seem to be thoughtful answers. You know, he seems he's present and decent. Now, I've never seen him lose his cool. I've never seen him say a really harsh comment about an individual. I mean, he says harsh things about groups of people, types of people. But, you know, he's a very skilled and disciplined politician. I think what most reporters will highlight as the chief quality of Scott Walker is his absolute adherence to message. It is impossible to knock him off the message. Sometimes it's impossible to get him to answer a question. He'll simply sidestep it in the way that he's decided he will sidestep it and stick to that. And you cannot get him to give a direct answer. You can, you know, he's just very good at that. He's very good at that political art of evading a question that he doesn't want to answer.
All politicians do that, though, don't they?
They all do, but I think he's better at it than most, because I think reporters have come to see that if you come back a couple of times with most people, you'll get them to say something that's more along the lines of an answer. I don't think that always works with Scott Walker. He'll stick to not answering the question he doesn't want to answer.
Yeah. John said Walker has visited the Eau Claire area, but he has never appeared in public, only at ticketed-only events. And John went on to say that he finds it extremely troubling that Walker doesn't answer questions from the press. And that's he'll answer the question, but he'll answer the question the way he wants to answer the question.
No, I think he does make himself available. There have been periods where he was less accessible than others, but you know, now that he's running for president, he's at a lot of public events. Even the Wisconsin media, who go to events in nearby states, are will find an opportunity to ask him questions about state issues during those moments of availability. So you know, he's not hiding from the press. He may not be answering their questions directly, but there still is some opportunity for members of the media to talk to him.
Do you think the members of the media are tough enough on Scott Walker when it comes to him sidestepping those questions?
I think they're as tough as they feel they can be. I think media representatives recognize a responsibility to truth test statements. So if the governor says something and they're able to point out a counterpoint, they see that as part of their responsibility to do that. Media are not going to be making judgments about his character. They're not going to be calling him names. That's not the role of the mainstream press. In my article, I go a little bit farther, I think, than I have before in terms of passing some judgments on him as a politician and to raise some concerns about what type of a president he would be and what we would expect from his leadership in areas like women's rights and the environment and war and peace. I think there are real grounds to be concerned about where Scott Walker as president would take us.
Let's. I'm going to go to Bernie in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. Bill, I greatly admire your work. You're impeccable. I think with Scott Walker, I look at a couple real obvious things, like the debate with Mary Burke, where he deliberately misled people about his intentions to run for president. I look at his comments or his view on the Medicaid expansion. Yesterday on this show, Ed Miller was talking about how it'll cost the state $1 billion over 10 years if that's not taken. And here we have a guy who purports to be a Christian cutting poor people away from health care, which can kill people, and costing the taxpayers while he purports to help the taxpayers. So there's so many obvious contradictions and so much corruption. To me, I really feel that the press, and I'm talking about, say, Milwaukee Television, Milwaukee Journal, even though they do some good things, and just in general, I think the press has been very weak in pointing out contradictions and very weak in terms of letting, not WBR, but in terms of letting people speak, either in letters or obviously conservative talk radio, which I don't listen to, against this man. I think he's a very dangerous, you know, kind of a practiced, skilled liar, really, to put it out there. I mean, that's why he's so evasive. He's really kind of an empty vessel and a very skilled politician with some very scary issue positions that he takes.
We'll react to that.
Well, let's give a case in point of something that I think speaks to the caller's concern. The right to work legislation. When Scott Walker was facing the recall election in 2012, shortly beforehand, he made a very firm statement about it. He said he had no interest in pursuing right to work legislation in the state. He said he vowed to do, quote, everything in my power to make sure that a bill for right to work did not reach his desk. After that election in September of 2014, shortly before his reelection to his second full term, he softened his opposition. He just said, I'm not pushing for it. So he muted his position from firm opposition to I'm just not pushing for it. And then when the legislature promptly passed it after the after his reelection and he signed, he said, well, I never said it was a bad idea. So he's got a spin for every occasion where he's putting things into he's making statements that, you know, on balance seem to be untrue. If he really were against right to work, we wouldn't have a right to work legislation that passed and was signed by our governor.
Let's Debbie on Facebook says, Wisconsin must like him. They voted for him twice and once in a recall election. Doesn't that tell you something? And I think Janice in La Crosse is going to echo that feeling. Janice?
Hi. Good morning, Joy. Thank you and your guests. Yeah, I'm all for him. I am a Catholic pro-life person, and I like the integrity of Walker, and he's getting things done in our state. I think we, as Wisconsinite people should say, oh my gosh, I'm honored that we actually have someone from our state running for the presidency of this United States of America that is in dire straits with Obama. This guy's taking us right down.
Janice, you say he's getting things done. What is he doing that you think is so great?
Oh, I love it.
Well, what is he doing that you think is so great?
He's running our state without having the government and all the regulations, the bureaucratic stuff that comes out of D.C. and Obama imposing his crazy things with Obamacare. It's like, no, we can run our state of Wisconsin, and Walker's doing that. Hey, he's got death threats and everything else from all the left liberals, you know, that want to just take the guy down. It's sad. You know, I feel at Madison, they say there's a state of Wisconsin, and then there's Madison.
All right, Janice. Well, there's a couple of supporters.
Well, you know, people give Scott Walker credit for things like, you know, getting the government off our backs, reducing regulations. In fact, you know, he's supported very intrusive interventions of government into the lives of people. He passed and signed a law that requires an ultrasound be done before a woman can have an abortion, a medically unnecessary ultrasound that is required because politicians want it to be done. You know, he supported a ban, and he signed a ban on 20 abortions after 20 weeks against the opposition of major medical groups in the state. You know, he's done a lot of things that increase government intervention into people's lives.
Yeah. You say in the piece that Walker may be too slippery for a flip-flopper label to stick. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's kind of like the right to work example that I gave, is that he's spinning things all the time that, you know, he's not really committing to doing something or to not doing something. And so it's very difficult to say that he's actually, you know, said an untruth or violated what he set out to do. I interviewed him in December of 2013 about the Indian mascot issue. And I write about this in the piece, where he talks about how his relations with Native American tribes led him to have, you know, real sympathy for the concerns about these racist mascots, and that he understood that, and he didn't think that schools should be using these names and mascots that offended Native American people. And then 2 days later, he signed the bill that would dramatically reduce the ability of citizens to oppose and contest these Native American mascots and logos, and he just, you know, he justified it in my interview and later as a free speech argument, that, you know, he couldn't be restricting the free speech of school districts across the state, which ironically, the head of the Wisconsin ACLU, which is, you know, committed to free speech, if anyone is, called a ridiculous claim for him to make.
Your piece starts off with the phone call from blogger Ian Murphy, who got through to Walker in 2011 by pretending to be billionaire donor David Koch. He wrote that Walker took an experience in which he appears foolish, gullible, and vile, and turned it into an asset.
Yes.
How did he do that?
He absolutely did that. And I think this is key to understanding his political skill, is how he at some point decided he was going to spin this as a lesson in humility, something that he learned from. And so he writes in his book about how after this call became public, that, you know, he read a spiritual book and decided that this was all a message from God to teach him humility and that he would learn this lesson. He talks in his book about how immediately when news of the call broke, that he faced the Wisconsin media and he told them that what he had done was stupid. At the initial press conference that happened after news of the call broke, that is a complete fabrication. That did not happen. You can go to the article on your website. I have a link to the video of that press conference. You can watch the whole thing. He never said that his actions were stupid. He never disavowed them. He defended them completely. And later on, he thought up that a better way to spin this would be to acknowledge that what he did was dumb, and to say that he had learned a lesson from it in humility, and he applied that retroactively, even though it was factually incorrect. I think that's an important thing to understand about how his mind operates and what he's willing to do. And in that case, I think what he did was in violation of the truth.
Joe in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, I just had a question. In Milwaukee County, we had this John Doe probe, which went on for a long period of time, and I think a lot of folks are not completely clear, and I certainly am not, as to exactly, we had a couple of prosecutions which resulted in ultimately convictions, I think by plea, although I don't think anybody ever actually went to trial on it, and some of those people did a little bit of time, but it's not completely clear to me why ultimately the John Doe investigation of Walker's involvement of the use of county money while he was the executive to engage in activities associated with his election campaign to the governorship, why that stopped.
We have just a minute.
That's a good question. There actually are two John Doe probes. The first one was completed. It did lead to six criminal convictions of individuals associated with the county executive, Scott Walker. There was a second John Doe probe, which looked into the collaboration between Walker's campaign and that of some outside groups. That was what the Supreme Court shut down just within the last few weeks.
Yeah. Well, maybe when we come back from news, we can touch briefly, if you want to, on how Walker has handled the controversy over the John Doe situation. But we'll talk more about Scott Walker, the politician, with Bill Leaders, who is the associate editor of the Progressive magazine. His latest piece, The Amazing Scott Walker, was published yesterday. It's also posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Check it out. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Bill Leaders, the associate editor of the Progressive magazine. His latest piece, The Amazing Scott Walker, was published yesterday. You can read it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. In it, he talks about how Governor Scott Walker, the politician, operates, what it's like to fall under his spell, and why it's a mistake to underestimate him. And we welcome your thoughts and questions, your thoughts on how Governor Walker is as a politician. What do you think are his best or his worst qualities? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lou on Facebook says, I'm not a fan of Scott Walker, but this is a guy who spun his flunking out of college into a positive. He regulated away the bargaining rights of workers while still calling himself free market, and he got reelected. So there's one thing you've got to give him. He's a great politician.
I agree. That was the point of my piece.
And why did he get reelected?
Well, you know, he was facing very specific alternative candidates. And in the matchups that he faced, he was able to make the case that he was the better option. I think it comes down to that. He still had an enormous number of people who opposed him and who will always oppose him, probably more so than any politician in recent Wisconsin history. He has divided the public into people who really like him and really hate him. And I think it's important for us to understand that's part of how he governs, is to be a divider, to pit groups of people against each other to his own advantage. And part of how he thinks is that he is able to get a lot of support in his mind from the people who are for him. He takes that as affirmation that he's doing the right thing, but he draws the same lesson from the people who oppose him. He takes that as affirmation that he's doing the right thing, but he doesn't think those people have any legitimacy. And so, you know, if both praise and criticism have the exact same effect on him, motivating him to stay the course.
In the piece you write, in Wisconsin, to pull a Scott Walker means to govern by surprise. What do you mean?
Well, I've seen that term used by people. You know, he pulled a Scott Walker. You know, he suddenly surprised us with this. The classic example is with the Act 10 changes, where never as a candidate or in the period of time after he was elected and before he announced his budget bill changes, the so-called budget repair bill changes that end up being Act 10, did he talk about, you know, completely undercutting the ability of public employee unions to engage in collective bargaining. That was something he sprung on people, and he knew he sprung it on them, because when that Coke call came out, he referred to dropping the bomb. He used that term. He knew no one had any idea that this was coming, and you know, and so he, you know, he sprung it on as a surprise. And I think that's part of, you know, how he has governed, is to not be completely candid about his intentions. I think that's true also in the right to work bill, for him to come out with statements saying, I don't want this, I'm not going to support it, and end up, you know, signing it and saying, well, I never said it was a bad idea. You know, it just shows that same type of, you know, evasiveness and the willingness to govern by surprise.
We have Joan in Eau Claire with us. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. In my opinion, to say Walker is disingenuous is a gross understatement. I don't view Walker as a leader at all. He's a divider. I remember when he was called before Congress after the Act 10 deal, and Dennis Kucinich badgered him. He just said again and again, what has this saved the state of Wisconsin? What money has this saved the state of Wisconsin? Because Walker made such a big deal about that. And Walker refused to answer. He refused to answer. And Dennis Kucinich was, he kept pursuing it. And finally, Walker just said it didn't save us anything. So eventually he did tell the truth, but only because he was, Dennis Kucinich badgered him, and thank you, Dennis Kucinich. I would like to echo the previous caller who said that the John Doe investigation isn't finished. Walker has never, I agree with the man, Walker has never been prosecuted for his involvement in the 2010 election when he campaigned on Milwaukee County time.
Anyway, yeah, and I'm sorry, Joan, we can't, we have very limited time, and you gave us already a lot there. This John Doe was shut down by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I don't think Walker is facing anything from the 2010 election, but for the recall election, there are some issues about whether the coordination was legal. Our Supreme Court said it wasn't, but I think that is going to be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it could come back as an active issue. The U.S. Supreme Court could overturn the judgment of our Wisconsin Supreme Court, and this could return as an issue that he needs to contend with.
Yeah. And did you recall that testifying before Kucinich? I don't remember.
I recall it somewhat.
Yeah.
I think Kucinich maybe had more luck than most reporters do.
Well, he's before Congress is maybe a little bit different, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Jay emails, what the left and Scott Walker attackers don't get is that they have made a martyr out of Scott Walker. Never in Wisconsin politics has anyone been so vilified, investigated, or threatened. Don't they see how their actions portray the people of Wisconsin? Have protesters made a martyr out of Scott Walker?
Well, they have in the minds of the people who really ardently support him. Again, this speaks to this baseline issue of divisiveness. Yes, you can find people who think that those who are opposed to Scott Walker are just horrible people. They are just, you know, the worst. That they're thugs and they're bullies and they're goons. And you'll find people on who oppose Scott Walker who will think that of his supporters. So we are in a very polarized place. And people think not only strongly about the governor, but about his supporters or opponents.
Wallace in Weyerhaeuser is with us next. Hi, Wallace.
Good morning. This is a wonderful program. I think we are going to have more of these now before the election comes up. I could go on and on and on. I'm going to be 93 years old pretty soon, and I only missed voting during World War II. I'm a World War II vet. Walker is the most narcissistic character I have ever known. He does not tell the truth. You know, if you want to call it correct, that's a lie. Now, I have to make one comment. This spring, some journalist or reporter, I forget which it was, had asked him what he would do with ISIS if he become president. And he said that he would handle them the way he handled the protesters in Madison. What an insult to combat veterans who have lost their lives, laid their lives on the line every day.
Wallace, thank you for your call. Thank you for your service. Yes, you will hear a lot more programs like this as we go along on the issues in the campaign. So, what about that? He said that he would handle that he was prepared to handle ISIS because he handled the protesters.
Yeah, that's how he put it. Is that his ability to deal with a group like ISIS was demonstrated by the fact that he stood up to these protesters in Wisconsin, which were, you know, school teachers and old people and, you know, a broad swath of the state's populace. I think a lot of people who heard that were insulted. A lot of the people who came to oppose his policies and the changes that he enacted and did so, you know, peacefully and because it was their right, were rightly offended to be put into that analogy.
Yeah. I just want to point out, we have a caller who is upset that I passed along a Facebook comment where someone said that Walker flunked out of college. He wanted to point out that Walker did not flunk
That's
out of
true.
Marquette.
He did not. He left to take a job with the Red Cross. He didn't finish his college tenure at Marquette. And it is true he's used that, even that, his lack of a college diploma as an asset. He said, you know, I've got 70% of the population is with me. You know, 70% of the population doesn't have a college degree. You know, therefore, you know, I have majority support on this. He would be the first president in a good long while who did not have a college degree. I think most people would consider that a negative, and somehow he's able to spin it as a positive.
On a lighter note, Bill, I wanted to conclude with here's Jimmy Fallon did a piece where he put together Governor Walker giving a campaign stump speech about how he picks up bargain clothing at Kohl's. Let's take a listen to that.
I went to Kohl's department stores near our house,
and I bought something at the price it was marked at.
So now I know over the years, if I'm going to buy a shirt, it was $29.99. I go to the rack that says
now it's $19.99.
I remember to get the flyer out that we got mailed at our house.
Well, you get 15 or 20 for if you're
really,
really
lucky.
30% off.
Tonette usually is with, and she'll reach into her purse and pull out some of that
Kohl's cash.
And next thing you know, they're paying me to buy the shirt.
So that was showing that he gave that same exact speech, you know, everywhere he went. It shows that he's the, you know, the everyday guy getting bargains at Kohl's. And
absolutely. And Scott Walker's got nothing on me.
Yeah. So this is a total coincidence that when I mentioned this, you pulled out a tie that you're not wearing right now, but you'll be putting on later because you have something you need to dress up for.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that tie?
I've been doing this at Kohl's for years. Okay. You get a Kohl's charge card, and you get every month or so you get a little flyer in the mail, and it's either, as the governor said, either 15% or 20% or 30%. You wait for the 30%. You get like two of those a year, and then you go to Kohl's and you go to the clearance racks. I really like these Jerry Garcia ties. These are $38 ties. These are really beautiful ties. I found some the last time I went to Kohl's when I had my 30% off for $4 each. They were marked down to $4 each. I got three Jerry Garcia ties for a total of $8.40.
What a deal. What a deal. So you knew all about this well before
Absolutely.
Governor Walker. We have less than a minute to go. What's the takeaway from your piece?
I think it's important to understand that Scott Walker is not like other politicians. He has a firmness of purpose, an unwillingness to compromise that is extraordinary. I think it's part of why people like him, part of why people support him. It also should be part of why people fear him. And I think we should question whether those qualities are really what we want in someone who would be the leader of the free world.
Thanks for being with us. Bill Leaders is the associate editor of the Progressive magazine. His latest piece, The Amazing Scott Walker, was published yesterday. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.